the most important sales tool in B2B is word of mouth. You know, if somebody says you've got to use Jim's, you know, insurance company, that means a lot. If I like the person telling me that and I trust them, it doesn't matter, you know, how many other things I've seen. But word of mouth today is really harder to get, because it used to be you got it over the backyard fence. You'd say, who do you use when, you know, but now, you know, everything about, you know, all your media is backyard fence. Everyone's talking to everybody. And, you know, clients always say, how do you get people to recommend? You know, we need more recommendations. And the reality is no one shares ordinary. No one says, I took a flight to LA and the plane landed roughly on time. They found my bags after 20 minutes. And the pilot, yeah, they will tell you, you know, the pilot got lost and landed in Cleveland, and they'll tell that to everybody. But they'll also only tell you something extraordinary.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, I'm looking forward to this discussion because it's kind of near and dear to me, and even goes back to my foundations when I started working within a career. About how to see things a little bit differently through the lens of your customers, and how it could actually impact us in B2B. But ultimately, what we're talking about at a high level is why organizations fail to differentiate when you start looking at the competitive marketplace that everybody is in. For some organizations, it's massive and severe. I mean, you have customers and clients and prospects that have, you know, 500 plus different opportunities. For some, it may be a little bit less, but here's what we do know is that for them, they're all big decisions, unless we're talking about pulling out the credit card, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have Alan Adamson with us today, who is actually the author of Seeing the How, Transforming What People Do, Not Buy, to Gain Market Advantage. Alan, welcome.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad we're here. If you could just share a little bit about your background with the B2B DM gang and how this book came about, that would be awesome.
Great. I started my career in marketing at Unilever, which is a large consumer goods maker and had lots of products that your listeners might know, from Dove on down. And when you're in that business, you know, while we believe Dove, and at that point it was pretty unique, was different than other body care products you could buy, ultimately it wasn't that different. And so you really had to focus on how do you make sure when somebody goes down the aisle, they reach for Dove versus Olay. And after a number of years of doing that, I went working in an ad agency, and ironically, still with Procter & Gamble. Good place to learn, because again, same sort of dynamic. If you're down the aisle and you're deciding between Crest and Colgate, you know, you can't really brush one half of your mouth with Crest and the other half with Colgate and then say, oh, this side is whiter, this side has less cavity. So it really forces you to get inside the consumer's head and think about, you know, how to meet their needs. And the final portion of my career, I was at Lander, which is a global brand firm. And I worked a lot, of course, still in consumer goods, but a lot more in B2B with IBM, Accenture, FedEx, insurance companies, and applied lots of the basics, as you alluded to, that you learn when you start off in more traditional marketing, to the challenges you have in the world of B2B.
So, and that's a good question. So it's when you start talking about over the course of your career, and I think this is my assumption is this is how this book can kind of, you know, really started having some roots and foundations and therefore continued to evolve, is that initially people are talking about, well, CPG and B2B, they're not the same. They're different. What would you say to that?
They have differences for sure, but lots of the principles that make you successful in the world of consumer goods, because there is so little real product differentiation, will also make you very successful in the world of B2B, where there tends to be slightly more differentiation, although not as much as most people think. And part of what, to answer your first question, finally, was, you know, what brought about this book? When I was in brand management and I wanted to do something new, I'd go to the lab and I'd say, you know, what do you have that's new? You know, how can we make this toothpaste better? And it was completely product centric. But as time went on, the difference between almost every category you look at, even if you have a better mousetrap, the number of days your better mousetrap is the best mousetrap on the market before there are three other people offering equal or better amount is shrinking. There's an end for that game. And if you don't know how to create a better experience for your customer, if you don't know how to talk to them differently, and even innovate your product differently than just waiting for the product just to get better, make no mistake, if you don't have a good product, that's a non-starter. But many, many people have good products. And the big challenge for B2B buyers is when you look at three or four software solutions, insurance solutions, whatever the B2B offer is, delivery insurance, logistics, you know, there's not that much difference between what one company promises, we'll talk about delivery later, and the other company promises.
Well, and okay, so then one of the things that you essentially establish early on is you talk about the right growth strategies. Well, for me, we talked about the whole playbook toolkit, and I started thinking about the multitude of different strategies. And from your perspective, what do you mean by right growth strategies?
So, to me, it's zooming out and not only not starting and ending with your product, not going to your customer and say, "Look at this great product. Here's what it can do. You know, here's its price. Here's how fast we can." If your entire focus is the product, that's one way to grow the business. But if that's your only way to grow the business, you're cooked. Because there's so many companies that have had similar products for years. I look at the car rental industry, and it's not B2B, but for years, everyone in the car rental business did business the exact same way. You made a reservation, if they were good enough to keep the reservation. You got to an airport, you got on a bus, you went, and you know, you picked up your car. So whether you took a National or a Hertz or an Avis, it was fundamentally the cars were all the same. and so ultimately, that's how the game was played for a long time until somebody said, "Gee, what are the pain points? How could we change how we talk to customers?" And National did it, one small thing many years ago. Instead of, you get to the pickup lot and you realize you clicked the wrong thing, and you have it happened to me when I was dropping my daughter off at college. I had a small sedan, and one stop at Target would end that small sedan's usefulness. Yeah, and I should have ordered an SUV. So at National, they came up many years ago with, you pick whatever car you want. And that little change was not a change to their product. It was a change to how they served it up. And it made a huge difference to their customers. Not exact B2B, but ultimately so everyone else was focused on what type of cars they had and how easy and how often the shuttle bus went back and forth. They looked and said, what type of problems? And consumers wouldn't tell you when you ask a customer, what's important in a car rental, they say, it has to be the right price, and it has to be clean, and it has to be gas in it, has to be easy. And those same things have been the same story for years, but somebody looked deeper, got inside the customer's head and said, "Gee, I bet you most people don't even think about what car they picked until they're in the lot and realize they picked the wrong car."
That's a great story and example right there. But you had mentioned, and I want to talk about this, you refer to fantastic experiences and how they get shared more than better mousetraps. And I added, especially when we're talking about B2B, is that, or intrusion. Mm-hmm. So if you could elaborate on that a little bit, especially when we start talking about the differences in between, I think it's a different tipping point for us, like pre-COVID versus post-COVID.
Right. And maybe we'll parking lot COVID, because I think, part of what COVID did was force people to reinvent how they did things. And, all the things, and we'll talk about some of those in a minute. But, when you think about that topic of how people do things, you can't start by looking at your competitors. One of the big challenges is everyone, if they're doing any marketing, they say, well, let's see what the other guys are doing, assuming the other guys know what they're doing. And it's almost like, I'll give you a bad sports analog. You know, when I play tennis, I play that badly. But in tennis, if you want to survive, you really just focus on what the competition's doing. You want to hit where the guy is not, where the woman is not. You know, in golf, it doesn't really matter. Yes, it matters who you're playing with, but if you're not paying attention to the wind, the terrain, things around us. And so most people in business, particularly B2B, are so focused on not only what they do in terms of product, but also just looking right in front of them and saying, how do I beat the dry cleaner across the street?
Well, and so for us, you know, in the B2B space, you know, that whole competitive landscape, it, you know, is could be very, very dense. And so we talk about how to break out from the pack. You mentioned something about product mindset. And we need to shift that. We need to expand to a customer needs focused, more of a mindset, as well as approach. So it's both strategy as well as tactical applications that go into that. You developed 8 lenses. So in other words, we have to see the how, right? Mm-hmm. And of those 8 lenses, I'm going to run through them real quick, and we're going to hit each one because I think it was important before we started recording. You said, well, it isn't a situation where these are necessarily sequential or evenly weighted. Mm-hmm. We have to really understand them in order to be able to apply them. So I'm going to go through these real quick. So the 8 lenses are focus in and drill down, customize and make it personal, joining forces, see like a concierge, go the rental route, approach things as a broker, explore virtual options, and getting close to the customer. So if we could just kind of go through those so you can give us a little bit more understanding of, again, where B2B can really use this in order to break out from the pack and how they could possibly leverage it. So focus in and drill down.
Well, I'm going to actually turn it around, Jim. And let's start with the last one, getting close to the customer, because I haven't met a company that says we're not customer centric. You know, we know our customer. And you have to keep in mind, you know, 2 things. One, they tend to be very, and it starts before you start looking at the customer. You start when I meet a company and they're in the rental business or technology business, the entire team has been in that business a long time. I'll give you, when I worked for a consumer goods company, when I worked in the beer category, they were all in the beer category for years. And they had they just said, this is the way people order beer at bars, this is where they buy. And they had a completely hardwired look at what, and they also were very customer centric. And the problem with that is that you're not curious anymore. You sort of know it and you don't notice changes. You mentioned COVID. And so part of it is, you know, even getting ready to look at the customer and be customer-centric, you know, defining that, because customer-centric is, you know, is more than just saying, I know how people shop for insurance, or I know how people shop for HVAC. You know, it's really being a little curious and skeptical and realizing, as we talked before the show, that if you ask customers what they want in almost any category, it's a rearview mirror. They will tell you what's been going on for years. You know, I want something on time, the right price. And, you know, if you just do that as your customer centricity and keep a customer lens, you're in trouble. So the best customer observations, best customer insights often don't come from asking them, what do you want in an insurance company? It comes from either observing them or showing them an idea about what about this, what about that. You know, people will give you hints when you watch them and watch how they behave more than just telling you. So day one is to make sure your team has fresh eyes. And when they say they're customer centric, say, really? You know, let's talk about it. You know, when was the last time you walked through with your customer through their factory? When was the last time you not just had, you know, coffee or something with your customer, really talk to them about their business beyond what you're trying to sell them? When was the last time you really, what are the 5 things keeping you awake? And I'll tell you a quick old story. I worked for a consumer company, a pizza company, and they did research. And what's your love about our pizza? We love its taste and it's, you know, fresh and it's the best brand we got. And then that's great, you know. And then, but one of our researchers asked the customers, you know, if this pizza company went out of business, what would you do? And their answer was, oh, I'd just go to B or C. You know, there was absolutely, so while they were telling them they loved their pizza, at the end of the day, you know, if they disappeared tomorrow, they had no issue going. So really make sure you're curious, skeptical, and don't ever say, oh, we know our customer. Oh, because, you know, if they know their customer, they know them in a rearview mirror.
I think that's a great point. One of the quotes I heard is, once you know, all learning stops.
And that's, you know, that is a key quote, because if you, you know, which is why it's important to bring new people onto your team that have never worked in your category, because they will ask the questions that will, what do you mean? What happens if we can't do a sales call anymore? You know, that will never happen. Yeah, of course, it did happen. So, you know, getting people who will ask the, gee, you ever think, you know, because if you're in the game, you play the game by certain rules. And if you think you know the customer, you get complacent. And most people in every business, I've been working with Bill 20 years. I know him and his business really well. No need to ask him any questions about his business.
So, and that goes back to what you had said, something about organizations not being able to, or they fail to differentiate. They can't break out from the pack. Is, you know, because of some of that lens not being as wide as it needs to be.
Right.
So, and I think for me, as you were talking too, I also start thinking about, for even from an industry perspective, the difference between, you know, those that get disrupted and those that do the disrupting. Even on the book jacket on the side, you start talking about, well, we Uber, we do this, we do that. All of those are very disruptive, and had disrupted that traditional, well, I know our customer way of thinking.
Right. And they all really didn't have a better mousetrap. I mean, you know, if you said we're going to change the taxi industry in New York City by getting people in cars to pick people up on the corner, you know, forget it. Or Airbnb, you know, you said, you know, we're going to compete with Marriott because you're going to sleep on Aunt Bertha's couch. You know, forget it. But, you know, so they didn't innovate, but they just reimagined what a solution could be without starting with the product. You know, people's cars. And yes, it was a piece of technology. But once, you know, everything got to a tipping point, and once people started to check reviews before they bought something. So, and the other point I wanted to talk about is the most important sales tool in B2B is word of mouth. You know, if somebody says you've got to use Jim's, you know, insurance company, that means a lot. If I like the person telling me that and I trust them, it doesn't matter, you know, how many other things I've seen. But word of mouth today is really harder to get, because it used to be you got it over the backyard fence. You'd say, who do you use when, you know. But now, you know, everything about all your media is backyard fence. Everyone's talking to everybody. And, you know, clients always say, how do you get people to recommend? You know, we need more recommendations. And the reality is no one shares ordinary. No one says, I took a flight to LA and the plane landed roughly on time. They found my bags after 20 minutes. And the pilot, yeah, they will tell you, you know, the pilot got lost and landed in Cleveland, and they'll tell that to everybody. But they'll also only tell you something extraordinary, you know, that when I did this, so I work a lot with an equipment rental company. And if you deliver on time, that's the expected. And if you don't deliver the equipment, you're out of business. But no one says, I rented from this company and they delivered on time. You know, that's a table stake. They only talk about, you know, I forgot to rent something. I had a whole crew waiting to go. I was able to call my rental company, even though I didn't have a reservation, and they, they got me the equipment in 40 minutes, and it was sold out all over town. In other words, so they did something heroic, and that becomes a story you share. So in B2B, you need to, you need to go to averages over. You need to do something, one or two things, extraordinarily well.
Okay. So even when you're talking about that, I start, you know, thinking about the confidence of decision-making and confidence of investment of a time. And that's why from a B2B perspective, you know, that whole word of mouth component becomes so important. But yet when you start looking at the traditional methods and tactics and playbooks and things like that,
right,
that's not really being leveraged to the degree that it could be in order to help them to break out from the pack and to differentiate.
Yeah, let me talk about one of the lenses. We'll flip through more of them. One of the lenses that's really relevant for B2B is to see like a concierge. Now, what do I mean by that? You know, if you're lucky enough to have stayed at a nice hotel, you know, a great concierge doesn't just go online and say, let me look at Chinese restaurants near here and this looks good. A great concierge sort of looks at you or your family and says, you know, Jim looks stressed. You know, I think he can't deal with getting on the subway. You know, and they solve a problem you don't even know you've had. So they'll say, you should go here. And on the way here, I would stop here. And in business, we are so focused on just the table stakes. Did the plane land on time? Did the equipment, did the product work when you plugged it in? That if you have somebody in your customer care department who can really see beyond just the table stakes and think like a concierge, you will get more wow experiences, as I just talked about. But you have to get your entire company. You know, FedEx was a great company to work for. No one needed to read the FedEx handbook as to what is the FedEx brand promise. It was brought to life in that old movie Castaway with Tom Hanks, that everybody at the company will do whatever it takes to give you absolute certainty that when you hand them something, it's going to get there absolutely on time. So inside the company, everyone is constantly thinking, you know, and doing whatever, even if it's out of their job description. You know, he didn't put the address there right. So there is a culture of figuring out whatever it takes to deliver it. And part of that is seeing like a concierge, because concierge, great ones, can see around corner, can see Murphy's Law, not just say, well, this customer expects a product delivered at 2 o'clock and we'll get it pretty close to 2 o'clock.
But I mean, yeah, and to me in the book, you know, you start talking about our emotional intelligence skills and capabilities as I go through this and talking again about that whole playbook piece and how we stand out. It can't be the, hey, let me get my appointment, let me meet my numbers, let me get my sales, you know, or let me get a lead. Or, I mean, it's a very, very different, strategic and tactical approach to be able to learn how to have your organization think like a concierge. And I would dare to say for a fair amount of organizations in the B2B space, that means you have to do some people replacement.
Yeah, because the people, you know, you end up with people that are either on autopilot or don't want to learn anymore, or this is their job. And typically, if it ain't broke, there's a massive don't fix it culture. And so by the time your quality, you know, your service quality goes down so low, somebody, as you said, comes in from the outside with a completely different model and you're cooked. It's too late to catch up. You're done.
You've been disrupted.
Yeah. Another thing is, you know, another lens is the focus in and drill down. You know, you think that one of my favorite B2B story is is Calendly. And so, you know, here was a sales guy who started it and he was making lots of appointments and, you know, he was using the usual tool, Google Calendar, Apple Calendar, Microsoft, you know, and there were big, big companies doing calendars, but basically they all looked at it the same way. They all said, you know, we'll take the old famous paper diary and we'll put it online and we'll make it available. But no one understood the customer, the salesperson's pain, knowing that when they made an appointment with Jim, it took 15 minutes to find out when Jim was free. They had 4 conversations, Tuesday at 2, and all of a sudden Tuesday at 2 didn't work. So Jim called. And the notion of, so here was an entrepreneur who had no tech background, a little bit of tech background. You know, when it should have been invented by Microsoft, Apple, Google, it was invented by a startup who understood that in a salesperson's life, juggling his or her calendar is a nightmare. They spent all day setting up appointments. And so it's an example of, you know, even looking at an established category and everyone doing it the same way, can you really identify, because all businesses need to solve problems, a new problem that happens in the new world? Because if you're only solving yesterday's problem, you're cooked. So drilling down and focusing in. There are many consumer examples, but in B2B, there are many things I can do for this customer, but let me figure out which touch point can really make a difference. I'll give you a quick B2B example. I worked for IBM years ago, and they had it was a chip division, and their chip was pretty good, but they were competing with Intel and other, and there wasn't, you know, there was performance-wise, if you wanted to understand the difference between one computer chip and the other, you had to get pretty deep into the page four of the, and so we looked at how IBM was going to market, and when we observed their sales process, the engineers would come in, talk to customers, and they would just bury them in a PowerPoint deck full of facts, and they had plenty of facts. And part of the discovery was realizing that everyone was coming in with facts and forcing them to say, no more PowerPoint. When you sit down with your customers, you're going to open a white piece of paper back in the day when you went to the customers on their desk, and you're going to hand draw a compound. You're going to use that as a discussion piece. There'll be some pizza, and get out of presenting to them and force you to build something with them and have more a dialogue rather than, you know, get in there and say, here are 10 reasons. Because most people, when they have a good product or, you know, they can't wait to tell you the 10 reasons. And that's all they get. It does this. It does this. You know, it's a Popiel's pocket fisherman. Do this. And in business, if you're not forcing yourself to listen and have a conversation, and you are, you know, going to the hardwired talk track, and even when complicated. And so for IBM, they were seen as somewhat arrogant, somewhat talking down to customers. By getting rid of the PowerPoint and setting up a way for the salesperson to sit with a customer and have a conversation, change their business. And it didn't mean anything else about there. You know, the chip was still the chip. Price was still the price, you know. But part of it is when you're looking to focus down and really look at your customer journey, and, you know, while every touch point's important, think about which touch point you could change to give you a differentiation beyond the mousetrap you're going in with.
Oh, I mean, so, okay. So, and this goes back to, so you're presenting the ones that are more B2B relevant. So I'm going to go through that again, because we have to make sure the other ones get hit, because I think it's really important so that people don't essentially just pick those out, because we set the stake, and potentially misinterpret or misapply. So what we've talked about is getting close to the customer, focus in and drill down, or see like a concierge and focus in and drill down. So then we have customize and make it personal, joining forces, go the rental route, approach things as a broker, and explore virtual options. So if we talk about B2B focus,
which— Let's talk about tailor a customer. Everyone believes they customize everything, but for most businesses, their definition of customize is really, really mass customization. And if you're not really knowing who you're talking to, and lots of consumer examples happen, whether in the car industry, people were coming into showrooms and every salesperson would start off with explaining the car when the person coming in knew more about the car and had done more research and really just wanted to have one or two questions answered about something. But that applies to business as well. So as you look at how you customize, how do you make it better? And, you know, there's no easy way to do it. But what was working, everyone says we tailor things, and everyone knows that if somebody tailors something to you, it's going to feel better going back to when you had that experience. But doing it is hard. And, you know, but ultimately for a B2B business, the more you can make it a one-to-one sale and not a one, you know, this worked for the last five customers, so I'll do it one-to-one, you know, and that's really hard to do. And it goes back to what you mentioned, Jim, which is your sales force needs to go in with questions, not a talk track. They need to go in as observers. They need to go in with a little bit of homework, because most people share everything they want to share up front. You know, go call your customer in advance and say, I'm coming tomorrow. Tell me the three things you want to talk about. as opposed to showing up and saying, here's my 30-page PowerPoint. Let me try to get through it. So tailorization is one of those things that is really easy to say, but really hard to do, but really key for B2B. And people have been talking about it for years. It's sort of like being customer-centric. But there's so much information about every company online now, or even the person you're talking to. You know, going into a meeting and not knowing that Jim worked, you know, at this company before, and then he was at this company, and then she was here, you know, without that depth. And most people do that, but not everybody.
I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, and it goes back to what we had talked about as far as know and curiosity minded and
right.
increasing our emotional intelligence. Okay, so then we have joining forces, go the rental route, approaching things as a broker, and exploring virtual options.
The rental route is growing. You know, it used to be you only rented cars, and you know, partly it's you need certain business solutions, but you don't need them every day. I mean, I tell the story about during one of the hurricanes that hit in the Northeast 6-7 years ago. A couple of trees fell in my driveway, you know, and I decided to go to the hardware store, who was fortunately open, and I had to buy a chainsaw. And I, you know, learned how to use it in the backyard of the hardware store, and I cut the tree. And but you know, if that chainsaw has been used more than 4 times over 5 years, and if I could have rented that, now you can apply that to business too. And certainly the United Rentals has done that. Many companies, but more and more companies are looking at what people traditionally tried to buy, and are not doing that. I mean, there was a when I was a young father. You know, the way when you had a child, you went and you bought one of everything. All of a sudden your house was good. And that, you know, all that stuff resides nicely in my basement now, waiting. And of course, it's out there. But now there's a company called Loop that, you know, that if you're a young parent and you don't want to buy 5 strollers, because the strollers only last for 3 months, you can rent it. And so, but that, think about that for business too. You know, lots of companies need help and owning something versus renting it. Or leasing it, you know. So just because you have a high price, the story I tell in the book is of a very high-end German dishwashing company that made commercial dishwashers for restaurants. And, you know, buying one of those costs more than the Maytag. And they found lots of small restaurants, you know, they didn't have the plumbing and they wasn't ready to do it. And it was just cheaper to have Alan come in and wash the dishes and pay Alan whatever now. And they realized that selling a washing machine at that price to a certain size was never going to happen. So they started renting it and say, look, we'll put it in for you and we'll charge you $5 every time you wash the dishes through it. And so they could put commercial level dishwashers in for smaller restaurants that couldn't afford to do it, that were always using manual labor, because they didn't ask them to pay $4,000 or $8,000 upfront or $10,000. They said, look, you know, there's a little meter and every dish is, you know, we'll just charge it by the wash. And so simple change, you know, change that business. And I think more of that's going to happen as customers realize that they don't need to buy everything all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that. And, you know, talking about, you know, opening up your mind to the thinking, as I started through my head, started thinking about a slew of different scenarios, everything from, you know, employees, having fractional employees to contract employees to, you know, and I'm not talking about services, I'm talking about actual, you know, employees, and then all going all the way to, hey, I can actually have a jet. I can, you know, borrow and rent the jet.
right, because you don't have to own it, you can rent it or lease it. So that's another lens. Another lens I like to talk about a lot for B2B is virtual. So the story I tell on virtual is that, you know, I had the illusion that I'm reasonably handy. And, you know, I was a couple of years back putting in smart thermostats to the house. And, you know, I opened the wall and I realized that, you know, they said connect the purple to the purple, the yellow to the yellow and the red. And I didn't have purple, yellow or red in there. I said, oh, now I'm in trouble. I've taken apart the wall. And, you know, I called a big B2B company and they said, well, there's really no one here, you know, just follow the instructions. I said, look, you know, I told my wife I could do this. I have the whole wall open. The air conditioner's not working. Is there anyone there I could FaceTime with? And they go, no, we don't. We only have the commercial line. And, you know, you can go online and get the PDF of the. Finally, you know, a year later, you know, I was able to get somebody and they said, yeah, we'll FaceTime with you. And I showed them and they go, yeah, you have a purple. That's the same as a yellow. In other words, but getting into that, thinking about virtual solutions, particularly. And COVID, of course, opened all that up. I don't go into my local hardware store without a little home video or a picture saying, look what's happening to the drain here. But now in business, you need to be more virtual for things that used to require a sales call or particularly customer service, nothing beats the intimacy, whether you're helping a customer do something easy or hard, of being available to see through their eyes virtually. And now that everyone has one quick story. I took my car in, like many people do, to get serviced. And when you buy a new car, the first two or three services are done at the dealer. And I think pretty straightforward. I took the car in, and all of a sudden I get a text from the dealership. And they say, "Mr. Hampson, you know, please, we've found something in under the car, in your engine. Click on this." Well, that's strange. Click. And they had taken a smartphone under the car, and they were saying, "Look at your brakes. Here's how much lining they should have. Here's with," and all of a sudden they did a video inside my car versus the old way of doing it. You go to the shop and they have a handwritten note. "We found you needed brakes," and you believe them if you trust it, but you never really know. And all of a sudden they started to use virtual to take you inside the car, to show you under the car. And it didn't require them to buy a TV studio. They just, yeah, there's a piece of software, but the tech guy took his phone, and all of a sudden I have a better experience. And the same happens in B2B. You know, don't underestimate, there's a company called Vidyard, and there are many others that do quick videos so if you're going to tell a customer, instead of sending him an email, send them a quick video saying, "Hi, I'm Bob. You know, I want to talk to you tomorrow about these three things, and I look forward to seeing you." Because all of a sudden you have a relationship, as opposed to saying, you know, "Here, read this 14-page email and then we can discuss tomorrow."
That's a great point. Okay, so joining forces, what does that mean?
That means saying that no one is an island. You know, can you partner with somebody to deliver a better solution? In this case, the dealership did partner with a company that helped them do these videos versus hiring their own person to go under each car and take a picture or video of your brakes or your transmission. But, you know, look to say, you know, if I want to provide a better solution, is there somebody we should partner with? It happens a lot in HVAC. They come and say, "You need to do this, but we don't handle that." You know, "We only do the AC. We don't do, you know, heating." And, you know, and just saying, look, if I'm going to help this customer, how do I partner with other people so we can go in and have more than 1 + 1 = 2? And it's just reimagining, getting back to that first point, what does a customer need? And oftentimes you can't be the best, only solution. And lots of them in the consumer world. One of my favorites is the old National Geographic, the TV programs and the magazine. And, you know, people aren't doing a lot of reading about whales and National Geographic, or not watching a lot of whale documentaries. So they decided to partner with a small cruise line and make National Geographic adventures. So instead of just taking a cruise and sitting there with a pina colada on the deck and, you know, you actually get in a Zodiac with a National Geographic photographer and a National Geographic naturalist. And when you're out there looking at the whales, you know, it's like reading the magazine. So neither company, the cruise company, you know, couldn't create that, and the content company couldn't create it. But by coming together, a lot of that can happen in business. Lots of companies produce their own content and you read it and you go, "Oh my God, this is boring." You know, better companies are partnering with media companies. There's a media company that teaches companies how to write succinct and clear messages, because they're in the business of packaging content. So if you've got a PR team that's all writing their own stuff and they've been in the construction equipment business for years, yeah, they know the construction equipment, but they may not know how to tell that story in a compelling way. That doesn't mean you can't go to a media company and say, "Look, we know what we want to say. Can you help us say it in bite-sized format?"
So how does that differ from approaching things as a broker?
So that's more of you being the middleman. The broker is a classic, you know, Airbnb is a broker because they don't, you know, they put a homeowner together with a vacationer. And you can do the same for business. You know, you don't have to provide it, you know, partly if you have access to three great solutions and you can tailor it and or bring solutions to that customer. Because, you know, there's a lot more flexibility if you don't own the entire plant delivering something. So if you've got a good customer relation with somebody, but you want to offer more, don't necessarily assume you have to build it to sell it. And can you, because you know that business really well, can you bring together other partners and be a broker, bring them together, a matchmaker? And there's so many two-sided markets from, when I was starting the book, I was listening to a podcast about all these startups, and a lot of them didn't do the traditional route, coming up with a product, building a factory, building a warehouse. They said, here's some people over here, and here's some people over here. How do I put them together?
Yeah, I think, well, it may have changed now, but, people used to cite and mention how, Airbnb was the highest valued company that basically owns nothing.
Exactly. And so today, if you don't have to build it, but you can connect and be a problem solver, not everyone can, there are pros and cons to everything, but, it gets back to what we talked about at the beginning, Jim, which was everyone started in my generation in both B2B and consumer with saying, well, how do we come up with a better product and building the product and designing the product and manufacturing the product? And, that's the way you did a lot of business. And can you now do a business that that doesn't require you to do that, that takes existing businesses that don't know how to talk to a certain industry or put them together like a broker or a, dating app does?
Well, and here's what I see. So when we start talking about, these eight lenses and learning how to be more, prospect or customer focus for B2B organizations, you had talked and mentioned several times having this is table stakes as far as the business is concerned. I mean, it's almost getting to the point quite rapidly that being more customer focused to the degree that we have been discussing will become table stakes. And it's an issue of, extinction.
Right.
B2B organizations, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and part of it is the minute you do, I'll go all the way back to the beginning of the conversation, the minute you say you come to National, pick any car you want, your competitors are going to do it instantly. And so part of the challenge for B2B is you have a lot of people that are looking at sales data and don't get nervous until the sales go down. And often by the time sales go down, a couple things, you're almost impossible to pivot. One, your best employees are going to bail out when your sales start going down because of, you won't be able to pay them what your competitors pay them. The solution will never be easy. So it's going to take you a couple of times to iterate to come up with a better solution. And if your sales are going down, you are constantly cutting and cutting back and you're panicked. And so if I had to say one piece of advice for, if you're only reacting by the time your sales start flattening out, you need to have a bit of the famous founder of Intel, only the paranoid survive, because the best time to innovate is when your business is booming. But that's the time human nature says, ain't broke, don't fix it. Let's just do what we did last year. We had good results. We'll just, just do a little faster and better. And that's the challenge for B2B is that you talk to lots of companies that own founders and owners of own businesses. They, they've been in it for 10 years. They've done it successfully. They learned the way to go. They're not open to relearning the world. They think they know their customers. And by the time they get the wake up call, it's usually too late.
As you were talking, there was, and I don't know if this is exactly correct, but I think the message still applies where when you start talking about organizations that are resilient and find their ways to be successful is that they have what he refers to as a rational paranoia.
Exactly. Because, the two things, the paranoia, the former chairman of United Rentals, which was a client a couple years back, used to talk about, what he brings to the company is impatience. I am, you know, and it was even in terms of how do you digitize the rental experience? They were doing it, but he said, look, my daughter can get on her phone and order, you know, this in, you know, 10 minutes and it's there in 10 more minutes. And it takes us 3 days to, and you have to redo the, you know, so he said, what I bring to the business is, you know, for a big company, impatience is the most important skill, as well as rational skepticism or paranoia that, you know, if you just keep on sticking to your knitting, everything will be fine.
Yeah, very much so. Well, Alan Adamson, great conversation, and I've appreciated greatly. And I'm sure the B2B DM gang would also love to know how they can get in contact with you.
Google search is still a good way. It's Alan at metaphors.com, or you can Google me, and I'd love to chat, and whether it's about your business or your problem or questions about seeing the house.
Alan Adamson, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.